10 Radio, community for the radio and the 10 parishes on 105 dot... What's it again? Okay, it's 0.3 FM, or you can hear on the web at 10radio.org.
Radio. Morning, 10 Radio listeners. Welcome to the April edition of Farming Life. We had to postpone it from last Friday due to Ian Jones, who I've got with me kindly, has agreed to come in. He couldn't make it because he had an appointment with an inspection. But I think you'll probably be glad that you were spared. I was thinking of doing an April Fool's joke and introducing my alter ego. Oh, she's Jessica, and she did talk like this, and she's a practical person. Anyway, I was going to take the Michael a bit and point out that we farming folk aren't all straw eating hair, whatever. Anyway, today, look, the sun. The sun, spring is definitely here, and the grass is growing, which we thought was a bit in March, being one of the driest months in history or record. And you know the sheep, the lambs that Rodney and Fee were talking about last programme, they're all gambling about in the fields opposite me, and I've got some lovely calves, and because you see we're spring calving, and so it's just really, really good. Now, maybe a lot of you are out in your gardens, but hopefully if you're listening, this morning we're going to be talking about why pigs. And I have, as I said, mentioned, I have with me Ian Jones, who farms nearby up at Brompton Rolf. I also have James Sewell, who is a smallholder who lives in Brompton Rolf, and he's going to be talking about the pigs he keeps. And then we're going to have a general conversation about just there's so much going on with pigs. Jim Doherty, Jamie Oliver, there's chefs, there's musicals, oh, just heaps. But let's go for a jingle from Julian, and I'll catch my breath, and we'll talk. Coming in, because I know you're busy, and as I said, the programme is Why Pigs. So, why pigs?
I hope you're not going to expect me to say I love pigs, because, yes, I like pigs, but I'm not a great lover of them. They don't
do it for you.
Do it for me. Yeah. It's one of those things. I'm a commercial farmer, and pigs provide a very good route for me to earn a living from a small area, which is what the principal object of my farming pattern is. I have a mortgage to pay.
Excellent. I mean, that's right. You don't have to love, be madly in love with your animals.
No.
But that doesn't mean to say you don't care about them. While they're in your care, you look after them. But how does your business work?
My business, I'm part of I'm a very small cog in a very large engine.
Right.
Principally, I'm just a very small part of what they call a pig pyramid.
Ah, right.
Now, a pig pyramid is a system whereby you try to isolate diseases within a commercial system. We're talking large numbers of pigs, which, of course, we need to supply the supermarkets with. I do the middle stage, which is just after the piglets are weaned. So there's a producer in front of me with sows. They produce the piglets, which are then sent to me. I keep them 8 weeks maximum, and they go from 7 kilos then up to 45 kilos.
Woo!
And then on to the next stage, which is the finishing stage, which is just before they go to slaughter.
So you don't finish?
I don't finish anymore. I used to finish.
Yeah.
But the system I have now, as far as I'm concerned, is easier labour-wise.
Right.
And also other environment problems, which no doubt we'll cover in a minute, came into play as well.
So how many pigs have you got on your...
I've got 1,500.
Woo! 1,500!
It sounds a lot, but quite honest with you, we put through 6,000 a year.
Right,
but
yeah.
On the grand scale of thing, it's not large numbers. I'm not a massive factory or anything. It is one building, which is deep littered straw, and they're kept in there for just 8 weeks.
Excellent. And we don't do crates in this country, do we?
Crates were banned several years ago now in this country. Yeah. But that was principally in the breeding side of it, on the sow side.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the finishing side of it has never been crates because it'd be pointless, you know. But we are very much a welfare conscious industry. We have to be. I mean, we serve the public in the end.
Yes, and they don't like to think that the animals are in any way being harmed or restricted or...
No. I mean, they have this concept, which we perhaps all of us do are guilty of to a certain extent, where we like to see an animal with a happy smiling face and a big bed of straw, content through its entire life. We strive to get that, but the reality is, we're talking commercial here, we have to put through numbers.
Yeah. So now, I know you mentioned problems. You went out of pigs for a while, and why was that?
The Dear Old Environment Agency was deciding that in this particular area where we are, well, virtually the 10 radio area, was to be involved in what they call a nitrate vulnerable zone.
What on earth is that?
I wish I knew. I'm not, you know, in effect they're saying farming was producing too many nitrates in an area which was the Tone catchment area.
Ah, right, yes.
We were a catchment area to the River Tone, so they wanted to reduce the nitrates produced in that area by farmers. So you were limited by how much manure and everything you could put on the land. Now, the strange thing is, before you I think that the most ridiculous part of this was the nitrate vulnerable zone applied to the River Tone.
Right.
We don't drink the River Tone.
No.
You could do what you'd like around Wimbleball and Clatworthy.
Really?
Anything you like. We drink that water.
Yes.
That didn't matter. But the dear old River Tone, they wanted to make a nitrate vulnerable zone. But they thankfully now have abandoned that.
Oh, good. Because I can understand, the water percolates down through, and if you put a lot of fertiliser on your ground, the nitrates from the fertilizer or manure filter down through into the water system. But as you point out, we don't drink the Tone.
But the silly thing about it is, farmers don't put it on purpose to percolate through, because we want it to stay in the ground to grow grass, to grow crops.
Yes.
So this concept that we were chucking bucket loads of manure on every single inch of ground and watching it all float down the river is wrong.
Yes.
You know, we don't want that either.
No. So they live. And your contacts, you were able to get back into pigs because you had been in them. And then when this NVZ zone thing was lifted, did they get back in touch with you, or you get back in touch with them?
I sort of. We still had semi contact. I got on very well with the manager for this area, and he came to me and said, "Look, did I contemplate ever going back in again?" Because they had, you know, an opening. In fact, they were quite desperate for somebody to do the stage of piglet that I'm doing now.
Right.
Which is not the easiest stage, because it's not as hard as the farrowing stage, the breeding stage. But there again, you have to be a disease conscious individual to take on this stage, because if anything's going to go wrong, it goes wrong now.
Goes wrong at this stage.
At this stage.
So what, which brings me nicely to, what are the diseases that you're fighting in pigs? Because I've been full of TB with the cows, and obviously there's the foot and mouth with pigs. But can you tell the listeners what you're looking for specifically with pigs?
The classic diseases which everybody has always thought about is like swine flu.
Flu, yes.
But it doesn't exist in pigs.
No.
It has no connection with pigs.
So where did they get the name from?
Same as bird flu. It has no real connection with
birds.
Poultry.
Oh, right. Yeah.
There's swine fever, there's Olszewski's disease, there's all sorts of wild and wonderful diseases. But on a practical basis, as far as I'm concerned, because most of the major diseases now have been controlled by border controls, by breeding, we're talking about respiratory diseases and perhaps dietary diseases, you know, through upset stomachs and that sort of thing. But most of those are now controlled with vaccinations. We vaccinate for everything we can possibly vaccinate for.
So you have good vaccinations available for pigs?
We're very little different to humans. Humans are very similar in their makeup.
Yes, you've probably got a statistic of how many genes...
I haven't got any statistics whatsoever
But it's interesting because we've been fighting for a TB vaccination, because vaccination makes sense, because you've got to handle the animals through a crusher anyway. But there isn't a TB vaccination because they say it's difficult. And yet it sounds like you're well provided with vaccinations for your pigs.
The poultry and pig industry have been intensive, which is not a word the public likes to hear, for many, many years.
Yeah.
And we are talking vast sums of money can be lost in a very short time, so it's been in our interest to push for all these vaccines. And also, unlike cattle, you know, pigs are a quick turnover, so we have to be on the ball all the time. Cattle are a slow thing, and the source of TB, well, is debatable. I mean, as a farmer, I realise I know where it most probably comes from.
Yeah.
But in pigs, the diseases, you have to be on top of it, otherwise your production simply goes down the tube.
Now, that's interesting that you mentioned pig and poultry, because my father says that that was what farmers, when he came back after the war, that's what farmers did if you wanted to make money. It was pig and poultry. And he then started investigating the dairy industry. But pigs and poultry are the best converters of food. Would you like to explain to the listeners what that means?
Absolutely. What it means is, for every kilo of food you put in, is how much that animal will put on weight-wise.
Right.
Now, in pigs, I'm looking for every kilo I put in, I would like to see half a kilo
put on. Ah, right.
My aim with the pigs, I have to get from 7 kilos to 45 kilos in 8 weeks.
Whoa. Yes.
So you've got to put on like half a kilo a day. So the worse your food conversion is, more it costs you.
Yeah.
But they've been bred. I mean, we're talking genetics here. We're not talking the rare breed types.
That'll be James DuPont.
Which my pigs are bred. They are not one breed. They've taken the best from a Tamworth. They've taken the best from the large black. They've taken the best from the large white. They also, on the request of the supermarkets, a little bit like the beef industry, I don't know if you've done that yet, whereas the Angus is the key one in the beef industry, there are two foreign breeds which are key for flavour, they say, in the pig. And that's a Duroc and a Pietra, which are French breeds.
Right.
So they've got to have a proportion of that to satisfy these outlets.
Yes, right. So that
but we've taken the very best. The beauty of pigs and poultry is its quick breeding cycle.
Right. Yeah.
We can turn round pigs. Well, a sow will produce 2 litters a year.
Yes.
If you're going to go technical, you're going for like 2.3 litters a year.
Yes. Right.
You know, so if you take it over an average of time, so that is what. So we have a quick turnaround. We got quick genetics, and also is an easy genetic stamp to understand because it's so closely related to the human.
Right. Now, mentioning genetics, I think I mentioned to you and you said you hadn't heard of it, but the food programme on Radio 4 covers a lot of producers' issues because obviously you can't have the food without it being produced. And I'm sure on one programme I heard that they were looking at genetically modifying pigs so that their waste no longer smelt so bad.
I have heard of it, and there could still be that they were putting additives in the feed which gave off a more perfumed
yes, right.
waste. But the middle and both ends of it is yes, they smell, but no different. I have horrendous times. I've been to London, I can count most probably on one hand, and I think the place stinks. It stinks of diesel, it stinks of drains.
It gags in your
it's a different
throat,
smell. That's all that gets people. We got a different smell in the rural environment.
than you have in the non.
And they throw people throw up their hands. I mean, the only real time they smell is when you clean them out.
Yes, I, being not far from you, know when you're dung hauling your pig dung, but it's only for a moment, the first breath, and then it's gone. And so it's part of rural life.
As
I said, perhaps, but the thought of having pigs genetically modified so that they don't... I mean,
genetically modified... I mean, you can do that through breeding, because we're talking a quick breeding cycle. You know, a gilt, you can put it in pig for the first time, 8 months old?
Right.
So within 5 years, you could have bred a totally looking different animal by simply picking the very best traits.
Yes.
Who on earth is going to stick their nose up a pig's backside to see if it smells or not? I don't know. But I suppose somebody might.
Yes, but the point is, do we really need to go that far when it's a natural smell that's part of the natural world and the farming life that we I would say that where smells are concerned, rotting silage stinks more than...
It's a different smell.
That's right, and you get used to it, don't you?
I mean, and the reason we get more complaints ever now is that more and more people have had the luxury, the privilege of moving out into the rural environment.
Yes, yes.
And they tend to, instead of having been people who've always lived in the rural environment, they're coming in from outside.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
They won't smell the smells of London, the smells
they're
of
just
the city,
not used to,
but
no,
they
right.
do smell when they come, and they also hear the noise.
Yes. Oh, right.
They think
yes.
the noise is horrendous sometimes when they hear us moving them. Well, they're not. You know, it's just general noise. You know, pigs will have a squeal and a bit of a banter and a bit of a fight.
And I suppose the nature of a pig squeal, it sounds like it's being murdered, perhaps. You know.
It does. But it's part of what they do.
Yeah,
I mean, having said,
yeah.
we're back to genetics again.
Yeah, yeah.
We are actually getting a quieter pig.
Oh, really?
Not in the sense that we've stopped them squealing or squeaking or grunting or anything. In the sense that we breed for temperament.
Ah, right.
Now,
yes.
if you get a quieter tempered animal, it's less likely to fight. Because a pig will fight. It's very
right.
much like a human being. It'll
yeah.
pick on a fight for no reason. And they always pick on the weakest.
Yeah,
similar
that's,
to humans.
Yeah, human nature.
Animal
nature, yes.
And so if you breed for temperament, you can breed down the noise level.
But have you had a lot of complaints when you're moving them? Cause
strangely enough, I've never had any complaints at all.
Yeah, because I was going to say the people that live around you are fairly kind of...
I have...
It's a rural community, isn't it, around Brompton?
I have some different sorts of neighbours nowadays, I must admit. The nearest neighbour, which are literally within yards of the main building, never say they can never really smell it or even hear them. They hear them occasionally, perhaps when we are loading...
And are those they're non-farming folk?
They're non-farming.
Right, folk,
they're
right next
retired
door.
Teachers.
Oh right, and yes, good. So, right. So, how would you see the future of pigs? Because there was this rally in London, and I don't want to get too political, but the National Association for Pigs, NAP, organised that.
Yeah.
And saying that a lot of pig producers were going to go to the wall because of the price of oil and wheat. How do you see the future of pigs? If more of us could go down the line that you are with Waitrose, is that a way forward, or you know, what in your is your opinion?
It's the same in all farming. You've got two sectors. You can have the small boys, which do the farmers' markets, produce
Hello, James.
Locally.
Talk to you later.
That's wonderful, wonderful. They've got their market, but
yeah.
when we're talking about feeding the population of a country, we have to talk big.
Mm.
Sorry, there's no way around it. We're talking numbers. We have to produce vast numbers of pigs to be able to feed the country. Now, the way to do that is through the sort of system I'm in, where you have specialists in each department. It's all owned by one umbrella organisation, partly because of the finance of it.
It's economy of scale. Yeah, yeah.
They also have clout as far as selling to a supermarket. They can not dictate, but they can encourage them to produce a better contract, a more permanent contract, because the Stockcroft, who I'm part of, produces something like 15,000 pigs a week.
Right.
Now, for a supermarket to say, I don't want those anymore, it's a big loss. You have to find another producer to suddenly send 15,000 pigs a week. Can't be done. So they all work together, Waitrose, Stockcroft. It's all one organisation, in effect. So you've got to get big. And out of that comes stability. You're going back to what your father used to say, that after the war, pigs and poultry, best way to make money.
Yeah.
Great. Then we had what they called the pig cycle, the boom and bust.
Right.
All of a sudden, pigs were flying, so everybody produced pigs.
Yeah, well, that's the trouble with
bang.
Yeah, bang. You know,
all of a sudden,
there was too much.
There was too much,
yeah.
Nobody wanted them. The way we do it, there's continuity. The public's getting a good quality, the top quality food they want for a price they want. And that's the only way forward. But the farmers' markets, fair enough. I'm all in favour of them.
Yes, so you can find a niche and,
you need
and
a
keep
niche.
It for local
yep.
food. Yes, so I don't know if, James, you do farmers' markets.
No, I don't do farmers' markets.
No, but,
no I do it with friends and family.
Right. So perhaps I'll try and cover a programme on farmers' markets, and maybe we can look at that more at another programme. But so, Ian, we were talking before the programme started and about the slaughter of, I think the listeners might be interested to know, because we looked last month at how sheep are dealt with. How does your system deal with the end product of slaughtering the pigs?
The end product? No. Well, we have dedicated slaughterhouses, which are dedicated Waitrose slaughterhouses.
Oh, excellent.
They only go there. Now, it is, I mean, it's not a subject which sort of is pretty
or
entertaining
in
any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about the way that the it's carried out, it is not unique, obviously, because it happens worldwide, but the way the big slaughterhouses now cope with the vast numbers, because they put through thousands a day, it's quite interesting in many ways. It's nearly all automated, which for a start sounds inhuman, but it's not. It is done with the welfare of the animals in line all the time. RSPCA monitored all the way through, welfare monitored all the way through.
Good.
I mean, the actual sort of demise of the pig nowadays in the huge slaughterhouses isn't by stunning or shooting or anything, it's actually by gassing.
Really?
They go on to like a conveyor belt, you see at Gatwick Airport, Heathrow, and that just slowly dips down into a lower level. Nothing dramatic, and there's a gas which simply puts them to sleep. No difference to us having an anaesthetic. They come out the other side stunned.
Well,
there's no handling of them, they aren't bullied or shoved around or anything.
They just go to sleep. Do you know that's... I bring it up is because it is a part of farming life.
It's an essential
there's
part.
There's life and death. We have a saying, where there's livestock, there's dead stock. And I just want the listeners, the farming community understand this, but I just want the non-farming community to... And I want to get back to basics in a way that this is farming life and death is part of it. And that, I didn't know that, Ian,
and that is
really good to hear. We humans, with our technology, ought to be able to get systems like that.
Absolutely.
And that is just really good to hear, listeners. I didn't know that, and I'm proud that we humans have come up with a way of dispatching.
And the best thing about the product we produce, everything is used.
Yes. Now, except the squeak.
Every bit of the pig's bar the squeak.
Yeah.
Now, what annoys me when you compare it to like a lamb being slaughtered or a bullock, there's byproducts, there's waste.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of waste.
Yes.
Yeah. Why is it at the moment a lamb is making more than a pig?
Really? Yes.
I just don't understand it.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense that you've got this animal which you need every single part of, and yet it's so cheap, and yet a lamb is more expensive. It doesn't add up.
What are the prices?
off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you. But I'm talking about, if we're talking livestock, if you go to Taunton Market, a lamb which is 30 kilos, let's say top, is making 70, 80 pounds. Now, a full-grown pig, which you're talking 100, 120 kilo, three times the size, we're talking, well, barely over 100 pounds.
Really?
That.
Yes.
So where's the logic? You know, we can produce top-quality food quickly, and yet we aren't paid for it. Hence the demonstration in London.
Yes, which is what they were saying. They're just not getting a fair price.
It isn't a fair price at the moment. And with the price of wheat and the price of oil...
Just adds...
I'm afraid the dear listener is going to have to get used to paying more for their food.
Well, is that necessarily the case? Could we, the middlemen, could they take less? The public wouldn't necessarily have to pay more, but do you think there's an unfair distribution of the money made from food in that the producer doesn't get it, but these middlemen, and you were saying that the beauty of your system is that you cut out, with Waitrose owning Waitrose and John Lewis, you're cutting out these middlemen that I think have been very greedy.
They own a lot, in effect. Could we make cheaper food? No.
No.
I'm sorry, but, you know, the processor needs to make a living as well.
Yes.
You know, and everybody watches everybody's bank accounts nowadays, and you see how much they're making. What has gone wrong is that, for some unknown reason, the public think they have a right to cheap food. They don't.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a myth put around after the Second World War, where there were subsidies made to farmers to get cheap food. There is no right to cheap food. I mean, people are spending less on food now than they are on entertainment.
Yes, exactly. Whereas, say, France, they have a different attitude. They're prepared to spend more money on their food. But that, folks, we could go on and on and on about the politics of it, but I think we'll leave it there, Ian, if you don't mind. We'll have a break, and afterwards we'll talk to James Sewell, our smallholder, and we'll hear more about the large blacks. Your... more of a non-commercial breeding. Is that okay, Ian?
No problem.
Thank you
at all.
So much.
Absolutely.
And
pleasure.
We'll talk to you later, folks.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the biggest piggies in the starched white sheds? You will find the biggest piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean sheds to play around in.
Welcome back, 10 Radio listeners, on this lovely day and Farming Life programme. is up and running with Why Pigs. And we heard before the break from Ian Jones, a commercial farmer, and I think he made some very interesting, valid points, and that was really good to hear about the gassing of the pigs. And now we're going to go to James Sewell, who's very kindly agreed to come in and talk about his point of view of why pigs. James, over to you. Oh, but before we do that, I'll just mention, I have her permission, Sandy Beatty, who lives in a small holding at the bottom of Pittsford Hill, just across the road from me. I spoke to her, and she would love to have come on the programme because she loves pigs but is busy working. I think she works at the school. So thanks to Sandy for offering. And she said, well, I'll talk to James Sewell. He's up at Brompton Roth. So Sandy gave me permission to say that she moved down with her husband, I think, from Hampshire to Somerset specifically so that she could breed pigs. And I think she had Gloucester Old Spots, and she got James going with pigs. But she tells me that her inspiration for Why Pigs was, as a child, she was totally taken by the P.G. Wodehouse story that had the Empress of Blanding in it, and she was completely bewitched by this pig. So that set her off. And later on in the programme, I think we'll be mentioning pig stories, Babe, for example, and others. But the Empress of Blanding got Sandy going. And Sandy, I think, did she inspire you?
Well,
James, welcome, James. Thank
hi.
You.
I grew up, my parents always had two pigs.
Right.
Every year we had two little piglets. So we watched them grow up, and then they went and got slaughtered. And I wanted my children to have exactly the same upbringing, so they understand where things come from and animals live to die.
Right. And to feed us.
And to feed us, and yes. That's the main thing.
All right. So how did you end up at Brompton Roth? Have you come from somewhere just to grow pigs?
I actually came from Hampshire.
Oh, you as well?
Yes,
oh, right,
but
yeah.
I lived in Holland for a while, and then we moved back. My wife's a GP in a local area, and I'm looking after my children as a house husband.
Great.
And so we bought a couple of acres to the house, and so I started up a small holding. And so I kept pigs and other animals, but pigs are my main love because they are so universal that you can use everything in a pig, which is brilliant, and we do.
Yes.
Sausages, we do our own hams, pickle our own hams, bacon, the lot. And it is just one of these animals that is fascinating.
Right, well, perhaps you'd like to share with the listeners and ourselves, what is it that makes the pig so fascinating, James?
The fascinating thing is, a pig, you can get nearly 3 litres a year out if you wanted to be like commercial and do it that way.
Right.
I have two sows and I rent in a boar, and we have one sow that will give 14 every time, and one that will only give 4 or 5. So if I want a small litter to go through the winter, I use the one that gives 5, because she will give more milk to them. And if, like now at the moment, I've got 14 little piglets that are only about 6 days old running around the field.
Oh.
And mine are in, I got 3 pens that are the size of tennis courts.
Right.
With pig arcs, and they are very intelligent.
Right.
They know.
This is, yes, perhaps we could explore more about the character of the pig. What proof do you have that they're intelligent?
When I take, because I usually take 2 or 3 at a time to slaughter.
Mm.
If I leave some behind, if they see that trailer coming, the first lot will walk straight in with the nuts. The second lot see that trailer coming,
and they know.
They'll eat the nuts up to the tailgate.
Yeah.
They won't go on any further. It's a struggle.
Yeah.
And if you try to get a pig on a trailer, it's not easy.
Once they've cottoned on.
Oh, once they've cottoned on that they're going away, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do they Do they know their routine? Do you have a proof
yes.
of their intelligence in that they know what should happen when?
Yeah.
Yes, and they let you know that something's wrong?
Yeah, if you haven't fed them by a certain time,
right.
they start making noise.
They come looking.
Yes.
They come looking for it?
Yeah, yeah, they will.
Or
the
they
piglets will.
Yeah.
Because the piglets will come out, because what I've got is pig wire, then I've got a barbed wire on the bottom. And where the pigs have rooted, they will go under the little piglets, come running across the field as soon as I come with a bucket.
They know
that food's coming.
Yes.
Yeah.
And are they, would you say they speak to you? Are they vocal as an animal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can actually, with a sow, you can stand there and stroke her, and she'll start, and she'll even lay on her belly, and you can rub her belly.
And does she gives off sounds of like purring almost?
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
a pleasure.
Yeah, if you.
Do they have, can you tell the different. Tones? Can you tell if they're angry or,
yes.
or upset or bored? Is there a sound when they make when they're bored?
I wouldn't say bored, but there is definitely when they start getting. If one of my dogs, when I'm feeding, if one of the dogs goes under the wire and gets anywhere near the piglets, she makes a different sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dog knows to get out quick. Because a pig it can be a very vicious creature at once.
Well, any mother protecting her young, you can have calf-proud cows that bash you. You've got your sheep that we talked about last month, and a mother pig can be very protective. Mm. But Ian was saying that they fight just for the hell of it. Do they? Have you witnessed that?
That's like any animal in a close...
Right.
If you see people in trouble in the city, it's people in close proximity.
We need our space, don't we? And they'll fight for that. Yeah.
And as you said, they will go on a younger one. Not so much when they got more space.
Right.
Because they can get away from each other. It's like if you have chicks and if you put one black chick in with a load of white chicks, they will all go for the black chick.
They'll peck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the same.
So, you know, the traditional runt of the litter will cop it, will it?
Normally they will.
Yeah.
If they're in a small, confined area. I've got one that's a runt, but he's quite happy running around, and he still gets his milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is this where you can understand people pushing for free-range pigs and not having them contained like Ian's commercial setup? People like to see free-range animals generally, but free-range pigs because they're not confined and they won't fight.
Yeah, and I think people have to agree that they have to pay more for free-range. If you want that welfare there, you will need to pay a little bit extra.
Yeah.
It's more expensive to keep a pig outside than it is inside.
And why exactly is that?
Because of the temperature, rain, cold. A pig will eat more.
Right. Going back to this efficiency
and
of
storing up and everything.
Yes. Yes, I understand. And hopefully the listeners get that too. How expensive is your health welfare care then with your smaller pigs? Because you don't have economy of scale that Ian does.
No.
So how do you deal with the health issue?
You still vaccinate. You can vaccinate. And you've got to worm them and things like that. So you've got the expense of that. But I wouldn't have the exact expense that he would have on that, because really they are very hardy pigs.
Right. So given outside, they're less likely to catch disease?
They wouldn't come to... Because they're in a larger area, they haven't got the problems that you would have in a closer area with respiritory. They're getting fresh air all the time.
Yes, which is what...
It's not enclosed.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
So, now, with this issue of... in your three tennis courts, have you any evidence of their organising areas for eating, areas for defecating, because pigs, from my experience, are very organised and very clean animals.
Yeah, they are.
Aren't they?
They usually walk along one side of the fence, and that's where they will pee.
Yes, so they've got a urinating area.
Yeah, yeah. And you see both sows walking side by side, doing it at the same time.
Peeing in harmony, yes, right. And then they defecate. They've got an area for...
Well, they will spread it out over the whole field.
Oh, that,
yeah.
Oh, right.
That they will, yeah.
Ah, right. So
but they won't inside.
Right. They'll never defecate inside.
No.
Well, what do you mean inside? This is
inside the ark.
Oh, yeah. What exactly would you like to explain to listeners what a pig ark is?
A pig ark is corrugated iron, which is like a half circle.
Right.
And it's on like a sled.
Right.
And it's boarded. So you can get in there, and when the pig's moved into another area, you clean it all out and take it away.
Right.
All the straw and that.
Yeah.
And most of it will go down to practically... down to dust. It is. That's the one thing you've got to be careful about when you go in there, to wear a dust mask.
Really?
Because
you get covered in dust.
Yeah.
So the deep litter then...
It'll
break down to virtually... So you don't have a manure problem?
No.
And you just feed the manure back into the ground?
It goes
ground.
Back in and I regrass it.
Yeah, so you don't have the problem of all this manure that Ian had of getting rid of the
because with two pigs and the piglets you don't have the same problem because within 2 acres you know that's quite a large
and
area.
The smell problem, do you have because you're right in Brompton, Rolf?
I'm near the church.
You've got a much more inhabited area.
Yes.
Do you have a problem with the smell issue?
No, you don't have the same smell at all. Because it's outside and it breaks down quite quickly and it goes into the ground.
All right. So now you mentioned you use all the pig.
Yeah.
Now I have a childhood memory of when we had a house pig for eating the refuge. We used to salt the pig and had a great big earthen pot. And we used to send the pig off to the local butcher who'd slaughter it for us, and it would come back jointed.
Yeah.
And my mother would then tell me I can't remember all the joints now, but then we used to salt, and I can remember rubbing the salt into the skin and the meat, and then we'd pack it into this earthenware pot, and we'd have ham and, you say, bacon and what have you, and sausages. And do you do that yourself?
Yeah, I do mine in brine, in a salt brine.
Ah, right.
Which is, with the salt brine, the way you check that it's very good is you put an egg, and the egg will float straight to the top.
Really? Oh,
the
I didn't know that.
The salt,
the density of the salt.
Yeah.
And how long does a pig, once you've processed it, how long does it last you?
Depends on how often you
eat. How many dinner parties you have?
You would most probably, it could last a family, a whole pig, 4 or 5 months.
Crikey, that's good, isn't it?
Because you got the sausages, you get quite a lot of sausage meat out of it.
Yeah.
We use even the trotters.
Really?
Yeah, we use the trotters, the head, and we make ham and pea soup.
Right.
So we use everything of it.
Amazing. And all this, we've not mentioned which pigs, the blacks, the
These
big
are
blacks,
large blacks.
Large blacks.
Yeah.
Right. I think we'd like to talk, if you don't mind, James, a bit about the types of pigs. Because the profile of pigs is quite high at the moment with Jim Doherty's pig farm and
Jamie Oliver.
And Nigel Slater did belly pork on his program, food program.
And River Cottage.
And River Cottage. Mm. So Sandy, who we've mentioned, had Gloucester Old Spots.
Yeah.
Now, are they a really traditional native breed?
They are a very old traditional native breed, yeah.
Right. Now, your large black, where do they come from?
I think they come from Europe. I'm not sure about that. It has been here for a while because you've got the large black and you've got the large white.
Right.
So, but they're a totally different breed to the Gloucester Old Spot. Gloucester Old Spot produces a lot bigger joints.
Right.
It's
a bigger boned animal.
It is a bigger boned animal. It has a tendency to go very fatty. That's one thing that smallholders will have a problem with.
Right.
Is to control the feed on a pig.
So that they don't become too
fatty.
So James, how does the animal put on fat? from what it's fed or being over aged? Is there a certain age that is best optimum for the pig to be killed?
Yeah, there is.
The fat gets, if you keep it too long, then it'll get fat. Or if you feed it what? What puts the fat on?
I started off with glycerol spots from Sandy.
Yeah.
And I had a goat that came into a phantom pregnancy. So.
You know, this is farming life, folks. Smallholders or not.
Being one of these people that thought, well, I'm not going to waste the milk.
Right.
So I milked the goat and mixed it with the grain.
Right.
So when they went to slaughter, I come back with a pig that had about 2 to 3 inch fat.
Yes.
Because
right.
of the richness of the milk,
yes.
plus the extra feed that was with it. I didn't allow for it being starting off with pigs again.
Yeah.
And so then I had to really look at how you feed a pig.
Right, yeah.
So I take my pigs at 7 months to slaughter. And then you get maybe, not like a commercial pig, you get maybe an inch of fat. And I like that.
Yes, well, because I was always of the understanding that a bit of fat adds flavour to...
You don't put oil on to cook it.
Bit on lamb or beef. So when you... Who is objecting to all this fat? Because you say you're not commercial and you don't do farmers markets. So where is your pork going?
My pork goes to friends and family.
Right.
So I do it that way, and I do a bit of bartering.
Yes. So good. So you, yes. So what do you barter best for your pig?
Trailer loads of wood.
Ah. Oh, right. Oh, yes. Let's bring back the bartering system.
Yeah, I love bartering.
I've got lots of wood, so and I love pork, so perhaps
right.
we could do a deal.
Yeah, we don't.
Now, so it was your friends that were complaining about the fat.
Well, it wasn't so much my friends, it was the butchers.
Ah, the butchers.
The
That's
butcher
interesting.
Looked.
Well, so we need to... I didn't speak to Mike Thorne about pork, but anybody, I know he will help you with what joints to use and how, because most butchers will.
Mm.
But, right, so that would reflect that the public don't like fat on their food, do they? Because we've been told, haven't we, that fat is not good to eat and for heart and cholesterol and all this. So, because Nigel Slater was extolling belly pork, and I love belly pork.
Lovely.
I love it, and
with
that's
Chinese.
All fat, isn't it? Or with Chinese flavouring, yes. So perhaps if we re-educate the public, we can hopefully come down a bit on this pork issue. But I was interested to hear that you, as a non-commercial pig producer, still had an issue with fat.
Well, you don't eat the fat. You cook with it.
You cook it.
So you don't add any extra.
You just
cook it in the frying pan, cut the fat off, there's a lovely meal.
And there's a lovely meal, that's
with
right.
With good taste. It's the same as the old hogs of sheep.
Yes.
It's got far better taste than a lamb.
Yes, yes, which we looked at that last programme. So we've got the Gloucester Old Spot. What other old...
The Berkshire.
Berkshire, yes.
Sandy Blacks. There are some other ones. There's I'm trying to think what they are now. Oh, I should have looked up on it.
No.
There are quite a few, but they are... Trouble is, they are becoming rarer.
Right.
And the problem is, with what we found with the Gloucester Old Spots, was finding boars that were not related.
Yeah, because
the
population
gene pool.
So it's getting... keeping the gene pool fresh.
Yeah.
Well, this is where the point made by Ian, this is perhaps where the smallholder really comes into their own. If you can keep the rare pigs going, we've got the two systems working together, and you've got a chance, haven't you, as a smallholder, to keep the rare.
Yes, you have. And if there's a problem with the commercial, they can go back to the old
gene pool
to try and improve it.
Anyway, I'm sitting here with Julian reading, because he bought it in sheep pig, is that right?
The book is Sheep Pig by Dick King Smith, which I'm reading to Luca, who is 6 years old at the moment, and it's the book which they made into Babe, and it's absolutely hysterical. There was a bit I was reading last night where it's the sheepdog that adopts Babe the pig,
yes,
who has been won in the competition, and Babe is learning to herd the sheep, and it's just the way that the dog talks to the sheep, and he sort of gets sent up the field to herd up the sheep, and she sort of starts off by saying to the sheep, "Move, fools, down the hill if you know which way down is." But it is wonderful, and it is all about how intelligent the pig is, mm-hmm, and how quickly it manages to pick up the ins and outs of herding sheep, and it's a commentary really on that intelligence.
So James, have you had any experience of your pigs exhibiting herding?
Not
behavior?
Herding, no.
No? Oh.
No.
But, there's a but there, but.
I've had one that quickly realised that the apps on the gate were all pointing one way.
Right.
And he would lift this gate at least 3 metres in the air to come out onto the grass.
He found a way of getting at the gate.
Yes, so I had to quickly take the top app, so turn it round so he couldn't lift the gate. Because my worry was one of my children would be stood there and the gate would come down on him.
Now, I have a story of a pig that we called it Chugafer. It was the last house pig that we had. I was a child. And we had some old sties from when our farm was pig and poultry. And so we kept her in one sty. And this pig had a about four foot high wall, no, maybe 3 foot high wall between the sties. Chugafer used to jump up onto the wall, and then she would rock herself so that eventually the weight of her head and chest took over, and she'd get down into the other sty, and she used these two styes. One was for urinating and defecating, and one was for sleeping in. But she used to travel between the two styes. I mean, and she'd worked that out. She hadn't got any other pig to show her what to do. And and then we have stories on the farm of how do you move your... Do you use a board to move your pigs?
Where I've got the two gates situated on one pen, I can open up them both together. So I just go in and just walk them with a bucket. If you have a bucket half full of nuts and just shake it a bit, they'll follow it.
They're fine.
Yeah.
Because my father says you could move with a board.
You can
guide them anywhere.
You can.
But they are manageable with... Well, most animals
with
are. Food, and you can control them.
As long as you don't excite a pig, because if you rush a pig, and it'll start running, and once that pig runs,
then forget it.
That pig, you won't get on that trailer that day.
Right.
You have a problem.
Oh, you said you take your pigs go
to Stillman's.
To Stillman's, which is very local,
very
isn't
close.
It?
Yeah.
And that brings up the subject of we sadly lost a lot of local abattoirs. I appreciate economy of scale and business, but hopefully we could see the re-establishment of more local abattoirs because it's kinder for them not to go so far.
It would be better because mine take 10-15 minutes.
That's it.
And you get there early in the morning, they're put into the pen. I've even watched them go through the door and watch what the guy does. It's very quick and it's over and gone.
It wouldn't be gas, though, in a small abattoir.
It's done with electric.
That's
very quick. It's stunned, they're dead, they cut the throat, they hang them up, and it's finished.
Mm, good.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking of... pigs and a small holding. I'd like to mention to the listeners that in the past most rural dwellings had a house pig, didn't they?
Yeah.
And we've got three tithe cottages on our land, and my father says that each of those dwellings had their own pig. And another gentleman that I was talking to, who's helping me laying hedges at the moment, he said the last rural dwelling that he rented had a sty built in as part of the backyard of the dwelling. And I was wondering if there are any listeners out there who can trace the remnants of a sty, or still they might use the sty now as a woodshed, or but they were an integral part of the rural community. Can you see that coming back at all? Are more and more people wanting to keep one pig as opposed to...
Well, I sell a lot of my piglets to other smallholders, and it has increased.
Right.
There's a few in Brompton Ralph that buy them, and some over towards Bishop's Lydiard.
Yeah.
So...
But is a pig a solitary animal, or do you think they ought to have company?
I always think they ought to have company.
Yeah, yeah.
I always prefer selling two pigs.
But their intellect would suggest they need interaction with something.
Yes,
and
yes,
so to
yes.
just leave a pig in a pen on
its own, it will get bored.
It will get bored, yeah. So do you provide toys for them?
I did at one time. I put a ball in there to see if they would play with it, and they didn't.
No, right.
What they will do is the water trough or the feed trough.
Yes.
You fill it with water, and the first thing it'll drink, and the next thing it'll knock it over, and it's laying in the water.
Yes. Yes, they like wallowing.
They love a wallow. So you think, right, now I've got to put some more water in. But you could be doing it all day.
Yes.
So it gets a point, you say, right, you do it so much, you're not getting any more water.
Well, that's interesting. Oh, yes, that's interesting to know, because I've always felt that they were... they're a herd animal, do
they
you
are.
Think?
They are a herd animal.
Because we talked about what's the difference between sheep and cows, and again, the character of a pig is much more a herd animal.
It comes from a wild boar, it's a herd.
Ah, talking of which, we've got... what do you think about the introduction of wild boar?
It has a place.
Yeah.
It has its place, but like every other animal, it has to be controlled.
Yes.
And it has to be.
Dare we mention the dreaded word cull? But it's part of animal management, isn't it? Is that you the numbers need to be managed.
It does.
Yeah.
Because a wild boar, if it's weighing up to... A wild boar most probably gets up to about 200 kilos. You wouldn't want that charging a child.
No, no. Because they've been released, is it in the Forest of Dean?
There's some in the Forest of Dean. There's been some sighted out the other side of... Yeovil.
They're that near. Oh.
There was one supposed to have had an accident on the railway line out at Yeovil, Penmill.
Right.
So that's how they know they were out there.
Yes.
But you wouldn't see them, and they're on Exmoor.
Right. Not the beast.
No. They've been.
Because if it was
really
a large black that had escaped, you could say, you know, oh, that's what everyone has been saying the beast of Exmoor is.
But it hasn't got a long tail.
No. It's a.
But they definitely got them on Exmoor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you wouldn't see them unless you suddenly bump into them.
Hmm. But the public don't have to be fearful.
No. Not as long as you're not walking out, you see a load of little piglets and think, oh, that's lovely, go
yes,
and get close.
Right, folks. Always beware of a mother, because whether it's a cow, a sheep or a pig, they're going to really want to look after their little ones.
Mm.
And that is note on which we can end, folks. Julian's giving me this clock look. Thank you for listening. It's been a fabulous chat with you, James.
Thank you.
And Julian, your input, and Ian, of course, who's had to rush off. Thank you, and we'll look forward to seeing you in May. And I'm not sure what the subject is, but it might be contractors, because we'll be harvesting all this grass that's growing. Okay, take care, folks. Bye.